To glow in the dark.
Glow in the dark. Glow in the dark. Glow in the dark. Glow in the dark.
Glow in the dark radio, the science fiction podcast. I'm your host, your writer and reader, Mike Luoma. Our music is by Juan Carlos Quatordio. You can find all my books and many things that are free at glowinthedarkradio.com. You can also get there by going to mikeluoma.com. That's M-I-K-E-L-U-O-M-A. If you want to find out what's happening with my books, my podcast, my comics, you can sign up for my mailing list. You can do that on any of my sites, glowinthedarkradio.com or mikeluoma.com. There's also a subscribe box in the sidebar on the blog. And you can sign up on our Facebook page. I didn't mention that. We've got a Facebook page, facebook.com/glowinthedarkradio. I'm on Facebook and Twitter as well, afterthere.com/, just M-I-K-E-L-U-O-M-A. Find me. Say hello, especially if you like what you're hearing or you, you know, want to find out more about how I come up with my stories and things. If you do join the mailing list, you get an exclusive, not available anywhere else, book called The Glow in the Dark Radio Guide to Life. It's an ebook in PDF form. It has a preview of Vacation, which is a story that you can find in the recently released Adventures of Alibi Jones number 2 comic book. It also has the unavailable anywhere except here now short story, Alibi Jones and the Ghost in the Machine. Now, the reason that's not available anywhere is it's actually incorporated into the novel that you're listening to here on this podcast, which is Alibi Jones and the Hornet's Nest. As a matter of fact, the chapters that we're into right now on the podcast are taken directly from that short story. You'll also find some excerpts from the Vatican Assassin Index, which includes the future history, which was like how I plotted out from where we are now to where Vatican Assassin takes place in the future. It's got BC's biography, basically, and some other interesting behind-the-scenes stuff, plus some previews of yet-to-come comics. There's preview artwork from Federico Guillen for Good Samaritan number 2, Good Samaritan Unto Dust number 2, and some preview artwork for Red Hot number 3. From Juan Carlos Quatordio. So you not only get inside info if you join the mailing list, you also get an exclusive book with content you won't find anywhere else. And as I said, we're getting into the part of The Hornet's Nest, the book, Alibi Jones and the Hornet's Nest, which comes directly from that short story, Ghost in the Machine, Alibi Jones and the Ghost in the Machine. So Alibi and his crew are actually closing in on the ancient alien vessel to investigate the supposedly haunted ship that it is. Alibi and his crew, supplemented by a couple others. It's Alibi, Emily, and Kat on his crew. But they've brought along a couple people who work for the project as part of this investigation. They've got Dr. Devin Humphreys, who's a xenobiologist, and Lenora Schwald, who's a sensitive, a psychic, who works for the project. They've started hiring sensitives, because they've discovered that there are alien races that communicate telepathically, and they're trying to facilitate that communication by using these sensitives, these psychics. So you got Lenora Schwald and Devin Humphreys joining Kat, Emily, and Alibi Jones as they investigate this ancient alien craft, which supposedly has some kind of ghostly guardian, a spaceman, glowing green spaceman that shows up and warns people away. So we'll get into that. Chapter 17 of Alibi Jones and the Hornet's Nest coming up on Glow in the Dark Radio. As for news, there's not a whole lot going on, but I do have something pretty cool I finally finished for the website, and that relates to this podcast. It's an Alibi Jones timeline. So if you go over to glowinthedarkradio.com, you'll see there's a banner right now for the Alibi Jones timeline, so you can click over there easy. But what I've basically done is laid out, you know, Alibi Jones's history and how it flows through the books and the short stories. So if you want to know, hey, where does Hornet's Nest fit in, you know, with the stories that I find in the new comic book that just came out? Well, that's where you can go and find that out. So that's the Alibi Jones timeline, which is now at glowinthedarkradio.com or mikeluoma.com. Free for the checking outage. And most things there are hot linked, but it isn't an attempt to sell you anything. You can just click through to other spots on the site where you can learn more about the books. So that's the big news. Check out the Alibi Jones timeline. And we're going to check out Chapter 17 of Alibi Jones and the Hornet's Nest, coming up next on Glow in the Dark Radio.
Hi, I'm Nuke Choss, the host of Nutty Bites.
And hi, I'm Tech, Nutty's regular guest.
Or antagonist. Our podcast is like a call-in show where geeks get to debate topics about speculative fiction.
We don't really debate.
Sure we do. We debate topics such as lame superpowers, the best villains, and our favorite apocalypses.
We're more like rant, rave, and then have massive nerd rages.
People call in from all over the world, sometimes minor celebrities, and we've even had some supervillains show up.
Do you ever notice that you never have any superheroes or good guys?
I'm a good guy.
Compared to what?
Antagonist. Not really a guest. Nutty Bites. Nimlast.org.
Now, here's Chapter 17 of Alibi Jones and the Hornet's Nest on Glow in the Dark Radio. The colossal, ebony craft of unknown origin filled the viewscreen on the bridge of the A.D. Foster as they approached, the great old ship's hulking immensity evident in the lack of surface detail, even as it blocked out the nebula and the stars beyond. As Alibi and Cat worked the cruiser's controls, Dr. Humphreys and Lenora Schwald stared at the viewscreen, watching the alien vessel.
"It's like driving up to a mountain," Humphreys said. When the others looked at him with blank expressions, he explained, "I like hiking, climbing mountains. When you're on your way to the mountains, they always look closer than they are, because they're so big."
"I was thinking the same thing," Cat said. "Mountains."
All eyes turned to Cat. He shrugged.
"Sarcasm," he said.
"Emily's fault," Alibi said. "She shouldn't be teaching you sarcasm."
"Too late," Cat said.
"Not sure I like the idea of a sarcastic darkour," Alibi said.
"Sounds like a cocktail," Lenora offered. "Bartender, give me two sarcastic darkours."
"I could use a drink," Humphreys said, rolling his eyes at Schwald's attempted humor. He chuckled, amusing himself. Alibi kept a steady hand on the ship's controls as Cat watched the power readings. After glaring at Dr. Humphreys for a time, Lenora settled back into a trance. Humphreys tapped into the cruiser's scanners and started taking his own readings from their scans of the alien vessel. "Dr. Humphreys?"
"Yes, Captain Jones?"
"Call me Alibi, please," he said.
"Devon," Humphreys said, gesturing at himself.
"Devon, did we ever figure out the first time around which race this ship belonged to?" Alibi asked.
"No," Humphreys answered. "We didn't have enough time to study it. It wasn't any race we'd run across prior to that first encounter with the ship. The early tests and scans seem to indicate it predated the reign of the ancient enemy. Chances are its people are long gone."
"Older than the ancient enemy, huh?" Alibi asked.
"On an interstellar scale, the ancient enemy weren't really all that ancient," Humphreys said.
"Go figure," Alibi said. "What's in a name, huh?"
"They called themselves the people. Azamet claimed to lead the elite of the people. Now, they're the hunger, if that encounter was real. Almost forgot about that."
He shrugged it off for the moment. Even if his astral encounter with the failed experiments of Azamet hadn't been real, Azamet had not been seen in human space in a few years.
"Better to worry about the matter at hand than bad dreams."
Alibi glanced at the array in front of him as they closed the gap to the other ship. "Cat," he asked, "any change, fluctuations?"
"Power indicators are holding steady for the most part," Cat said. "We are seeing an internal power anomaly caused by the operation of the transbase nullifier, but it is following the patterns we were told to expect."
"Keep me informed, Cat," Alibi said, "especially if you get an anomaly you don't expect."
Be sure to watch especially close for any fluctuations when we dock with that old airlock. Emily returned to the bridge. The transpace nullifier is on. Seems to be working, she reported to Alibi. Good. Do you mind if I go back to my cabin for a bit? She asked. No, not at all, he said. We'll call you when we need you.
Poor kid.
Alibi couldn't help but feel a little sorry for her as he watched her turn and leave the bridge.
She would hate that, I'm sure.
Emily hid her emotions well. He couldn't read her at all. Alibi turned back to the ship's controls and appreciated something he did have the ability to read. 5 further minutes of steady progress brought the tiny cruiser up alongside the giant alien derelict, revealing more detail. The surface of the craft appeared to be an intricate webwork of ebony fibers, interwoven strands of varying size, knitted together into a solid black wall. A glint of metal gave away the location of the portable airlock installed by the last covert ops team. As they approached the ancient husk, Alibi lined the cruiser's starboard side airlock up, skilled enough a pilot to make docking, even in these unusual circumstances, appear routine. He guided the cruiser in, matched airlock to airlock with the alien ship, and brought it home with a satisfying thump. Seal established, Alibi said. We have a lock.
The onboard anomaly is reaching a notable level, Cat informed Alibi.
What do you mean? Alibi asked.
The anomaly is caused by the operation of the transpace nullifier,
Cat explained.
The greater the power draw by the nullifier, the greater the anomaly. The nullifier is working, drawing on greater and greater power, and dampening something. I am not sure what. We cannot find anything on our sensors.
We have any way to find out? Alibi asked Cat.
Not short of turning off the nullifier and seeing what happens, Cat said.
What, and have that ship suddenly disappear? Pass, Alibi said. Think we want more nullifier, not less. Let's get the big one up and running. First things first. Alibi and Cat, safely encased in construction EVA suits, guided the large transpace nullifier into place on the outside of the alien ship. Dr. Humphreys had identified the surface of the vessel as a hardened, crystalline silicate.
A simple adhesive should suffice to hold the unit in place, he'd said, like sticking it to glass.
Alibi and Cat mounted the transpace nullifier like a giant metallic spool up above the airlock where the cruiser was docked, held in place by a large square pad of industrial-strength, double-sided tape on its base. The adhesive appeared to hold. Alibi pushed against the device, propelling himself backwards into space. Seems secure, he said, as he floated back in. Cat pushed off the nullifier as well.
Yes,
Cat said. He used his momentum to float down to the cruiser. Cat pulled a set of portable power and control cables from the side of their ship, unrolling them from their external hub. Alibi watched as he glided back up to the transpace nullifier, the cables playing out behind him like a long tail. The side of the alien craft loomed like a giant wall of woven black glass, dwarfing the cruiser, the transpace nullifier, all of them. Now that they floated outside of the cruiser, they could see that the surface of the alien ship wasn't solid black. The material had a dark transparency, striations of silver buried deep within.
Can black glow? It sure does shine.
It almost looks like obsidian, Alibi said, except for the metallic-looking streaks.
Obsidian?
Cat asked. An earth mineral, a black rock, shiny, like glass? Alibi tried to explain.
Black rock. Black glass?
Cat said.
Yes?
Kind of, Alibi said. Alibi and Cat connected the power and control cables to the transpace nullifier. Job complete, they floated back to the cruiser's open portside airlock and headed inside. Hope this works, Alibi said. I'd rather not become one of its ghosts, you know. The lock filled with air. The inner doors opened.
Yes, Cat said. I, too, should very much like to remain in physical form. That is not sarcasm.
Nope, Alibi said. They removed their helmets and EVA suits and made their way to the bridge. Alibi checked with Emily, back at her usual post. She'd returned to monitor the power readings for the cruiser
and the built-in transbase nullifier, while Cat and Alibi were outside.
No real change, she said. Just some small fluctuations.
Okay then, Alibi said. Cat, let's increase the power plant output. Get ready to bring the external nullifier online.
Dr. Humphreys had made himself at home on the bridge, turning a passenger seat next to an interface panel into his own makeshift workstation. He studied spectral analyses arrayed on a portable screen in front of him, but looked up at the mention of the nullifier.
Did it stick okay? He asked.
Seemed to, Alibi said.
I'm getting some very curious readings from the surface of that ship, Humphreys said. It's hard to pin down its exact composition.
Anything we should worry about? Alibi asked.
I don't think so, Humphreys said. It's inert, at least for now.
Let me know if anything changes or gets weird, Alibi told him.
Anything.
Righto, Humphreys said. He turned back to his scanner readouts.
Alibi watched the cruiser's power plant's potential output build. Took 8 long minutes until it grew high enough for Alibi to turn on the larger nullifier.
There, Alibi said, throwing the switch.
There's no guarantee that will stop the alien ship from jumping, however it jumps, and wherever it jumps to. But, at the very least, we're not experiencing the power drain the other ships did.
We are, however, exerting a great deal of power to do that,
Cat pointed out.
Interesting.
Oh, Captain Al!
Lenora Schwald appeared on the bridge.
Lenora?
Alibi acknowledged her. What can I do for you?
I was wondering when I could go over onto the ship, she said, to try to make contact with whatever spirit or mentality might be inhabiting the craft.
I'm not sure it's a good idea for you to go over there, Lenora, Alibi said. Can't you do your thing from a distance, from here?
Well, yes, sometimes it's possible at a distance, she said.
She grew a touch indignant.
Each case is different. In this case, I haven't gotten anything so far.
She paused.
Well, except a headache. That just started. I don't think it's an attempted first contact. We'll see. Will it be soon?
Will what be soon? Alibi asked.
Will we be able to go over there soon? She asked.
Did you bring an EVA suit? Alibi asked her.
What?
Schwald was confused by the question.
A spacesuit? You know I didn't, Captain Al.
Well then, you'll have to wait, I'm afraid, Alibi said.
But there's an airlock, she said.
And no air on the other side of that airlock, Alibi informed her.
Oh!
There are probably some bodies over there, too, Alibi said. We're going to try to get them out first, and then try to repressurize the section. I don't know how long that will take.
Oh, she said again. Right.
She stopped to think for a moment.
I guess I'll go back to my cabin and meditate some more. And see if I can lose this damn headache.
She turned and made ready to leave the bridge, but stopped by Humphreys.
I suppose you have a suit, Devon.
Humphreys looked up.
Matter of fact, I do, Lenora, he said. But I've got no intention of going over there before I can walk over dressed like this. Besides, he said, and looked down. I know some of the people who might be over there. I'll let our contractors clean it up first.
I see. Well, please call me when it's safe to go over there,
she announced to the room and Alibi. She left with a flourish, sashaying out off the bridge.
She may be the only one on the ship in a hurry to get over there, Cat observed.
She's going to go over there and sit on a mat with her eyes closed, Humphreys said,
a scientist's scorn in his voice.
She doesn't face the grim task that you do.
Speaking of which, Alibi said, leaving the phrase hanging, but looking from Cat to Emily. Alibi locked his command console. He, Emily, and Cat left Humphreys alone on the bridge as they set off on their grim task. As much as it sucks to have to retrieve bodies, it's still pretty amazing that we're about to set foot on this ship, Alibi said, as the three of them stood in their suits in the airlock, connecting the cruiser to the mystery craft.
We still don't know anything about the people who built it, except that they predate the ancient enemy.
I am not comfortable with this mission, Cat said. I would like to register my complaint now.
No sense of exploration, Cat? Okay, duly noted, Alibi said. Emily, you want to register any complaints while we're at it? No, she said. She didn't elaborate. The atmosphere finished vacating from the airlock, and the door in front of them opened, the space beyond an inky black void. We'll get some room lighting soon, Alibi said. The temporary airlock's power supply is recharging. It's got some built-in emergency lighting. Should be enough power building for them to kick on any minute now. In the meantime, they had handheld light bars to illuminate the area around them as they floated into the darkened interior of the alien vessel. At first, the space around them didn't look all that alien. The last human crew on board used lasers to cut a hole for the temporary airlock, and then inflated an emergency shelter inside of the alien ship to create a human workspace and safe zone. Alibi, Cat, and Emily floated into that shelter, their light bars held out ahead of them. While the somewhat familiar surroundings were a comfort, the three were also watching for dead bodies and, possibly, glowing green ghosts. Alibi looked around the shelter space, waving the light bar to light up distant corners. It was strange to see such a normal, human-looking space inside of the alien shipwreck. He jumped a little as the airlock's emergency lighting kicked on. The emergency shelter began drawing power as well. A dim glow began to light the shelter room.
Oh! Cat said. There, behind us.
Alibi turned around and spotted the first frozen corpse, a woman lying on the floor, floating just above the floor, as the shelter's artificial gravity hadn't yet turned back on. Her body was covered by a fine layer of frost. When they turned her over, her mouth, nose, and eyes were crusted over by more frozen foam crystals, created when her body's moisture tried evaporating in the vacuum. Cat had body bags in his EVA suit's backpack. He drew one out and began to unfold it. He, Alibi, and Emily gingerly wrapped up the woman in the bag and sealed it up around her. The shelter's power supply finally gained a full enough charge to restore all functions. The room lights came on. Alibi looked up as the artificial gravity kicked in. A frozen, screaming face came flying down at his.
That was Chapter 17 of Alibi Jones and the Hornet's Nest on Glow in the Dark Radio. A frozen, screaming face came flying down at his. Well, we'll pick things up there next time. With Chapter 18 of Alibi Jones and the Hornet's Nest on Glow in the Dark Radio. I like it, a cliffhanger ending, a bit of a cliffhanger anyway. And we're still just getting into the investigation as we check out the supposedly haunted alien ship, this giant ancient alien vessel. So Lenora Schwal wants to go over there, and Humphreys, of course, wants to go over, but not until he can walk over in his civvies. But first, Alibi, Emily, and Cat have to do this grim duty and remove the corpses of the last covert ops team that investigated this ship. They're hoping that somebody's not going to be coming for their corpses at some point. That's the hope. So find out what the deal is with that screaming face coming down at Alibi on our next episode of Glow in the Dark Radio. Bringing my books chapter by chapter free each week. I'm your writer and reader, your host, Mike Luoma. I also have my website, glowinthedarkradio.com or mikeluoma.com. If you head over there now, there's a brand new thing I've just done, or just finished doing. I've been working on it for a while. It's the Alibi Jones timeline. So you can see how all of Alibi's novels and short stories and comic book stories all fit together in a timeline. Again, that's over at glowinthedarkradio.com or mikeluoma.com. Once again, I encourage you to join my mailing list. You can do that at any of my sites. The Facebook page as well, facebook.com/glowinthedarkradio. Send out a mailing, an email about once a month, and you get an exclusive ebook the PDF of The Glow-in-the-Dark Radio Guide to Life. That's all for this time. I hope you'll join us for the next chapter of Alibi Jones and the Hornet's Nest on our next episode. As always, if you want to find out more, just go to glowinthedarkradio.com or mikeluoma.com. Our music is by Juan Carlos Quatordio. And I am your host, your writer and reader, Mike Luoma. Thank you again for listening to Glow in the Dark Radio.